Good with you?
Hello. I hope this is working. I just want to tell you it's working.
I think that this light might be the indication that it's working.
Is it? Okay, well, this will be more to listen to. Today, some of you may know William F. Buckley was Mr. But you didn't know who William F. Buckley was. You're sure you all do. I genuinely felt, I was talking to Jackie about this. There are a very limited set of people in the world that one really feels one ought to have met, because you should have not just the experience, you should have a masoret. And I kept on meaning to write to Buckley so I could have the experience of meeting him, so I could have a masoret. And regrettably, I never did that. And now he's next door. I would say Aleph HaShalom. I read the National Review Hespet for him today, which wasn't necessarily. I don't know that they necessarily lived up to the Hespet, particularly after he retired, but they basically described him as Beit Hillel. He held his positions passionately. He argued for them reasonably, and he always did it with kindness to the other side. And that, I think, is just a. In many, many ways, I thought he was a wonderful role model for what it means to be an engaged religious figure. And even though his religion is not one I've read that I would have obviously subscribed to, and there were many things he could do. His religion was uninhibiting in a way that mine deliberately is not. But I learned a tremendous amount from him. So, honestly, I attempted to say Kaddish, honestly. That's for one of my rebbeim. I was going to just throw it as an entree, that's just because it's important that it's nogea to the topic that we're talking about, which is the notion of deliberately constructing a masoret for oneself and meeting people. And particularly, I want to talk briefly about what it means, whether a masoret is restricting or liberating. Now, this is a general approach of the halakha per se, and probably all of you have read T.S. Eliot's tradition and the individual talent. If you haven't read T.S. Eliot's tradition and the individual talent, I strongly encourage you to do so, in which he makes the argument that tradition and the individual talent, in which he makes the argument that Chiddush is only possible against the background of a Masoret. In the absence of a Masoret, you don't have Chiddush, you just have anarchy. Creativity can only take place in the context of a tradition. And that relates to. That relates. When I first came to the planning to go to Maimonides, I met Rabbi Seth Farber in the Lowy Library. He told me I was going to have a lot of trouble as a high school teacher, and he was right, because I thought of myself as a Mechadesh, but the students wouldn't know what it was I was supposed to have said. And he's only Mechadesh if people expect you to say something else. But if they don't see the difference, so, you know, like the excitement of saying something new, it just totally vanishes. And I thought the excitement of the excitement of saying something different than you would have expected. No, this is just, you know, it's like anything else. If I said there's no difference when I say it this way or I say it the conventional way. Because to them it's all conventional. It gives you a certain amount of power, but it takes away that element of teaching, right, of experiencing the new. I thought that was an instantiation of T.S. Eliot's point, which it took me some time to learn. My first year at Maimonides, I think, was pretty clear to everyone else, not to me, that I was spending my time explaining how I was different than the Rav to students who didn't know what the Rav said. I did all my qualifying my way away from their own position, but it took me a year to figure out the faintest idea of what it was I was trying to do. Because I didn't know what it was they were supposed to be thinking that I was disabusing them of. So I guess the other thing I'll throw in, which I always like to point out, that I found, which really brought Elias' point home to me, was when I first discovered the sonnet as a tool. I had tried to write poetry at various times in my life with very moderate success, probably would be a polite way of framing it. I did win the YU contest one year. And then the second year, I would have won the contest, except after Lee decided that even my poem wasn't good enough for an award. So that was sort of, that didn't do wonders for my confidence, I have to say that, when he told me that. But a big part of it was that I couldn't figure out what, you know, I didn't know what a poem was. I couldn't figure out where it started and where it ended. And then years later, I discovered the sonnet, and it was an incredibly liberating experience. And all of a sudden, I could write poetry because I had the burden of the structure was taken away from me. And I thought that was a wonderful metaphor for halakhic life. So those are examples of the idea of the masoret being liberating as opposed to constraining. And an immediately relevant category for me, which I talked about Jose, I guess last week, is I went deliberately to Avraham Soloveitchik's shir, Avraham Soloveitchik Zecher Tzadik Livracha, toward the end of his career, when you didn't go to this shir anymore because it was the coolest intellectual shir in the world. There were moments when it was really very cool, but it was not a shir. It was not a shir in which he wasn't being mechadesh. Right? On a really good day, he could remember his old chidushim and he would tell them to you, and they were cool. But he wasn't being mechadesh, and there were long stretches in the middle of shir where he couldn't remember his old chidushim. But I went because I wanted to be a talmid of the only. At that point, was the only prominent Orthodox rabbi who supported the civil rights movement as a religious obligation. I just discovered that Rabbi Titus Elizabeth, which Laura Dagi found in her thesis that Dr. Blau had given her, that Rabbi Titus gave a speech at the Polo Grounds encouraging people to go to the March on Washington, which is a wonderful speech and really deserves to be very widely publicized. But at that point, all I knew was Avraham Soloveitchik, and I knew that I wanted to be somebody who advocated in the Orthodox community for these sensibilities that were expressed in Avraham's position in the civil rights movement, and so I wanted to be able to say I'd been his Talmud, and I wanted to actually experience being his Talmud. And I'm very grateful now. I think more and more, that even though I wasn't a great Talmud in this year, and we didn't agree about everything. But I think it. So when we had the conversation at Kobe last week about whether you can pass him like the Meiri on issues related to Gentiles, so I can say, look, I happen not to think that that's the way to go, but for me, I can just say, look, it's precious. My Rebbe said that you pass him like the Meiri, and it's obvious you pass him like the Meiri. And as opposed to pretty much everyone else, that's to go around saying, well, the Meiri, what's the authority level of the Meiri? Can you pass him like the Meiri? You're telling her Soloveitchik. It was pleasure though, because like the Miri, that's the end. Right? So Masoret can be very liberating, like, that they can enable you to do things that you would otherwise not be able to do, because you can claim that's your Masoret. Now there's also constraints, because if you're going to say that, then you also have to accept the things you can't do, just because it's your Masoret. But if you believe in constraints, then Masoret can often be liberating. If you believe there are no constraints, every option is open anyway, so of course the Masoret can only constrain you. But if you assume that there are constraints, then a Masoret can give you a choice of constraints that can free you, because you've had all the options open to everybody else, plus you have your Masoret on a lot of issues. Okay. That obviously is highly relevant to Shvod Tzibur as it is played out in the community now, whether having a Masoret matters or not, in terms of what moves you have. So, the genesis of this year is I'm rereading Rabbi Mendel Shapiro's Eidah article on women's aliyot, and sort of going through it to some degree to test whether not the truth of the position, which we can talk about some other time, but whether the article itself is something that people could legitimately say is that it's something they're relying on, as opposed to the conclusion. And I thought that, as opposed to addressing it head on, I'll just take some tangential points and see how they stand up. And so one of the things that interested me was footnote 10, in which he said, quote, right, the assessment of Shvod Tzibur as a secondary argument appears in other contexts. In particular, he says that the Gemara says, right, the Gemara in Gittin says that we can't read from Chumashim because of Shvod Tzibur. The Rambam Paskins like this. And his underlying qualification, but nonetheless, the Rambam in his Shuvot says that it's permissible to read from a defective Sefer Torah if no other is available. And the Rambam says about this, in quote, right, that there's no, the Rambam says that it's obvious that the problem is only for Tzibur and not a Bracha Levatala, because if it were a Bracha Levatala, the Gemara would have said, would have said Bracha Levatala instead of Kvod Tzibur. So whenever you say Kvod Tzibur, it means there isn't another problem. Okay, so it interested me. It seems on the one hand, on the first, on the first version that seemed to me obvious, and you shouldn't need to resort to a Shulchan Rambam to tell you that if you say the rationale is in Shulchan Kavod Tzibur, that there isn't something else. Now there is a response to that. The response to that is what Tosfos says on occasion, the Chad Avelut. Right, so you know, you have two reasons for saying it. So you only gave one, and that usually shows up in terms of kushyot. In terms of isurim, not so much, I don't think. But it's interesting to me that Zafka Rosh Shapiro chose to cite a Rambam as opposed to bring the proof directly from the Gemara. And it also happens that this Rambam and its relationship to the Mishnah Torah I had seen in a different context, which is that Professor Chaim ben Menachem uses this as his great example to show that the Rambam understands the difference between psak and codifying. That he assumes that in fact the Rambam's position in the Tshuva contradicts his position in the Mishnah Torah. But nonetheless, right, in a Tshuva you don't say the same things as you do in a as you do in a code, because codes are about rules and Tshuva are about cases. First of all, Menachem, I should say, the first time I was introduced to the notion that there's a difference between case law and academic law was in his book Judicial Deviation and Talmudic Law, which is a really interesting book. And may even be right. I haven't done the evidence well enough for years to check it. But when I first read it, it was revelatory to me, because I'd never thought of looking through Gemara and distinguishing between when the Gemara is citing case law and when it's citing, right, and when it's citing academic positions. So I had seen this tshuva also, so I was interested in looking at this tshuva in other contexts as well to see whether that thesis bore out as well. Okay, so let's take a look at the Gemara.
Okay, just
yeah.
I'm just curious whether that comes up at all with respect to Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik's big mega essay on the change from Shredding instruction from the famous one. The one where he talks about transitioning from passing out of text, basically.
Yeah, I think that is relevant, in that people who pass in out of text in that sense are less likely to be case specific. But I think the absence of masoret is really the key issue there. Mm-hmm. I think that the masoret often gives you much more flexibility in interpreting text. In practice, right? In theory you could argue the other way, but you always have to be careful about thinking of the prime example for me is years ago, Rav Rosenzweig gave a spectacular lecture called "The Creativity and the Individuals of Avodat Hashem." The only lecture really that I've ever been so inspired by that I actually just wrote it up and published an original lecture, which I never do. I wrote up my notes on that lecture. But what I didn't write up is at the end of the shir, right, as part of the shir, argued about how the Brisker Derech would, because it showed you all these intellectual possibilities, would lead to this new renaissance of Tzach. And I raised my hand and I said, "Hakush Makish." And he's responded, "But it's here, you shouldn't." Which very much was on point. Be careful here. Maybe it will. Okay. So, this is the way I remember. He may have a very different... that's the last story that we really have to start to share. the famous story of Rav Chaim and the Bucky, in which the Bucky comes and challenges Rav Chaim and says, what you just said is wrong because there's a Tosfos otherwise. Rav Chaim says there's no such Tosfos, right? And the Brisker story, right? So they go look up and discover there isn't such a Tosfos, and they say, Rav Chaim, how do you know? And he says, I know what Tosfos couldn't have said. What they'll tell you is that in the Hasidic Yeshivas, of course, there is such a Tosfos. Who tells the story? All right. Shalkule bnei Galil Rav Chelbo. Malu likros dechonashim deves haknesses betzibur. So what's the halacha about reading from a chumash, whatever chumash is? Deves haknesses betzibur. Okay, what's the obvious question you want to ask about that phrase? Well, we know what's the much. I already asked that. What's the tzibur?
What's
the beta knesset? What's the beta knesset? Or even more sharply.
Yeah.
Isn't that redundant? Right? What would it mean to read from the chumash and the beta knesset without the tzibur present?
Maybe you're just studying.
And you can argue that there's such a thing as a tzibur outside of beta knesset. You could argue that kriya relates to non-ritual kriya, right, and even to intellectual kriya. But at the very least, one should be aware, right, that there is a possible distinction. Right, the added phrase basic chance or the added phrase betibur, right, either way, may at least say that this is not setting a blanket rule. It's setting up a rule only in these cases. Okay, for some reason, he didn't know the answer. Rabbi Yisrael Nachman didn't know the answer either. So Asa Shoyel Bei Midrasha, V'Peshtu Amehad Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Sefer Torah Shechaser Yiriyah Achaz Ein Karen Bo. Okay, so they finally resolved it basically on what seems to be a Kal V'Chomer. Look, if you're not allowed to read from a Sefer Torah, and here it doesn't say Betzibur, by the way. Right, which leaves one room for discussion. Maybe it's a Kal V'Chomer, Ben Menoshel Kal V'Chomer. If a Sefer Torah which is missing one Yiriyah can't be read from in any context, then Kal V'Chomer, a Sefer Torah which is missing an entire Sefer, or four entire Sfarim, can't be read from in public. Maybe. I doubt it, but one should be open to the possibility. Okay. So it does seem like a reasonable Kal V'Chomer. If you're missing one Yiriyah, then right, obviously you're missing more. But the Gemara says, Malovi. Right, so this is a phenomenon that I'm sure the historians have much fun of. I don't know enough about when the Gemara just says Velohi, and goes on, right, where the authority of the Velohi comes from. The one that always amuses me most is the story in the deposition of Rabbi Gamliel, which Rabbi Gamliel has the dream about the fancy wine barrels which are full of ashes, right, which is what the letting all the Talmidim into the Sefer are, and at the end the Gemara just says, yeah, but no, that wasn't true. Hashem just showed him this, right, in order to make him feel better. So,
how do they know?
Yes, well, Lo Bashamayim is Lo Bashamayim.
What I point out, the people writing the Gemara, the descendants, the people who didn't want to let it.
Could very well be. This answer then gets picked up, right? Does it then suggest that's what the Baskol of Rabbi Eliezer was in Tanar Shel Asai, right? And it's another way of totally eliminating the authority of any supernatural element in halachic discourse. But I just enjoyed that moment where they had a dream, and they're even denying that God sent him the dream. Right? Right? That would be disrespectful to Gamliel. God sent him the dream to deceive him deliberately. Right? It's always struck me as this fascinating, fascinating line. But here the Gemara just says, yep, so in the Beis Medrash they paskin this on the basis of Shulman Achmei, Delovi, Hasa Mechzer B'Milsei, Hacha Lo Mechzer B'Milsei. Now, Mechzer B'Milsei is an interesting term. How would you understand it offhand? Right? What does it mean? Right? What's the difference? Why is a Sefer Torah Shechas Yiriyah Achas Mechzer B'Milsei and a Chumash is not?
Well, if it's you'll be missing part of a paragraph or something.
Okay.
So you're off in the middle.
Okay, so one possibility is that Yiriyah don't match sentences, and so you're leaving an incomplete sentence, and then the problem with an incomplete sentence can be either a substantive problem, that you have a Sefer Torah which is incoherent. But we have to ask ourselves, is it really, what's the borderline? A sentence, a parsha, right? What is it?
A book.
A book, right? What exactly is it? Or alternatively, it could be that it's Nikar. Right, everybody understands this is an incomplete book. But again, if you understand the plot, you understand that certain places are bad endings. Yes?
Couldn't it also just be that if our concern is that someone is going to assume that the Sefer Torah is good and use it, and we're going to lose the Masoret of what the Sefer Torah is supposed to look like because we've got circulating bad texts, which would explain why you can't even read from it, as opposed to reading in the Tzibur, then a text which is accurate but incomplete would be a different problem. Now, this is all the Sefer Bereishit. Nobody's going to come to conclude that Shmot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Dvarim don't exist.
Well, I mean,
but if I have a whole Chumash which is missing a Chet in the middle of a word somewhere, that's a problem. No?
Well, the two cases we have are a full Sefer Torah, except that somewhere at the beginning, end, or middle, we don't know the right term, somewhere one piece of cloth is missing.
Okay, fine. Sorry, the whole column of text. It looks whole. Somebody might copy it. Somebody might memorize it.
Whereas the Chumash doesn't look whole because everybody knows it's Mishnah from Shei Torah.
Well, that and because if you get to the end of it and they're still in Mitzrayim and they haven't been enslaved yet, then
you're not at the end of the story.
So you're assuming a certain amount of public knowledge, because I could claim they'll get to the end of it, and they haven't gotten to Eretz Yisrael yet.
Yes, I'm assuming that much public knowledge, I'm assuming.
Because you know, there seems to have been a point in history where people didn't quite realize that the Dvarim was missing.
Yes, I understand that, but that was a little earlier. A few hundred years earlier than this year.
Okay.
Could you figure out what just thing is you're it's okay if people copy the issue that come up from this spot. You know, even what's the worst case scenario for having a single Chumash? Is it that right now what we're talking about is reading in a show.
Right.
So if you read from this particular book, what would you pay? You're reading from this one because that's what we're reading this week. Regardless of whether or not there's more, that's what we're reading this week.
Okay. So what happens if I have a Chumash plus?
What if it goes all the way to the middle of the Sefer Shmot?
Right. So, so you have everything you're reading from this week, right? There's nothing missing in Bereshit. Okay, so it's not. I just point it's not so obvious. Rashi has interesting language. Rashi says, "Shekorin lo sefer Torah, shekorin lo sefer Torah v'chaseru," right? Which means, you know, apparently according to Rashi, if you could just, you know, that if you started publishing the Reader's Digest Sefer Torah, right, it would be fine that it was missing Sefer Vayikra, which it is, by the way, when they put it out. They skipped Vayikra.
All of it? They don't ban incest.
They skipped
Vayikra. You're allowed to sleep with your brother in the Reader's Digest Bible.
They react.
Just checking.
They react the same way that Rav Yosef Ibn Kaspi does. Gold verb should be able to say from it, say for a non hefrefi and Gibosha, right? Gibosha, Chia, Karamba, to say for a Mora. End discussion.
Hold a second. They don't ban incest? Because that's not in the Ten Commandments.
It's in the Ellipsis. It's in the Ellipsis. They just put it out. But once you have the Reader's Digest Bible, so everyone knows this is not a Sefer Torah, this is a condensed Sefer Torah, then it would be perfectly fine according to Rashi, apparently. Right, you could
that's sort of what I was trying to say.
You could lay in some Reader's Digest Condensed Bible.
I don't know if you want that.
The Hebrew version.
Here.
The Hebrew version. Okay. That's probably right. It's not clear. Right? Here's the thing. It's not clear that there is a theological basis for this. It's not clear that there is a psul per se. Right, in Erech, that there's a halakha of a Sefer Torah, and Kriya has to be from a Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah is defined as X and Y and Z. This is not it. But according to Rashi, it's actually the reverse. It's because it is a Sefer Torah that is possible. But as long as we call the Chumash, who cares?
You chop a piece out of the middle of the Chumash, it might again be possible, though.
So you chop a piece out of the middle of the Chumash, it might again be possible that might be possible not because of appearances or because you're not supposed to write down incomplete books or something. I don't know.
That doesn't mean you can have a Reader's Digest version, right? That doesn't mean I can combine it any way I want. I mean, they had Chumashim, they had Sefer Torah.
Right.
It has to be a complete whatever you're using.
Right, but complete only defined publicly. Right, it has to be. People have to whatever people call it. So if people know there's such a thing as a condensed Sefer Torah, that would work. Now there may be other technical problems with the production of the condensed Sefer Torah, right? But assuming that you had such a thing, there wouldn't be no issue of reading from it. Assuming you had such a thing, everyone understood what it was, right? If somebody put out, for example, Kol HaPsukim Sheva Talmud Bavli, which is a real book, except that instead of being organized by Tanakh, it's organized by Daf, so you can sit in the Beis Medrash. And when you hit a pasuk, instead of having to go to look through the Tanakh to find it, you just open up to the right dot and call up Sukkim Shmatal and Kavli. And there you have the whole. I kid you not. There really is such a Sefer. Right. So now the Oz Madar has integrated into the Daf.
It's interesting actually that nobody did write a book which is just the narrative portions of Chumash excerpted. We did it to the Gemara. But we don't seem to. I mean, until Reader's Digest, done it to Chumash.
This is true. Interesting. Okay. So if we say Velohi Hasan Nefzer Milseh Chelo Nefzer Milseh, then we have another statement as following: Rabba Rav Yosef Damri Tervahu Ein Karim Duchumashin Veis Lekneses Mishum Kvod Hatzibur. So the progression is really fascinating. Because we go out of our way to reject the previous psak, only to come to the same conclusion. Right, it's a very, so it's a very, very strange development. Okay, and so not at all clear where it comes from or what the relationship is. When they say Mishum Kotzi, we don't know what the Kotzi bird is. We don't know if that is more Mekel or less Mekel than the previous thing. We don't know if they what the boundary is. Chumashim as opposed to something else. Okay, all we know is that we have this new phenomenon called Kod, and I should say, here it says Kod HaTzibur. As we have it in the printed edition, the other instances are always Kod Tzibur, and this is Kod HaTzibur. However, it is not perfectly stable in manuscripts. There are manuscripts where it's Kod Tzibur here and Kod HaTzibur elsewhere. So the majority is Kod HaTzibur here, and the majority is Kod Tzibur elsewhere, but I don't know that you can't build universes off the Dik because it's not stable in manuscripts. Although it's tempting. Okay, so that's our first introduction to Kod Tzibur and how it relates to the halachic. Now, it's not clear there was halachic tzama for anything else either, right? Since the way Rashi, right, at least the way the Gemara ends up previously, well, let's say the Gemara's maskana is that the chisaron of a sefer Torah shechas yiriyah achas is the fact that it's called a sefer Torah nonetheless chaser. And a chumash is different. It doesn't tell us what the havamina was to possible chumash, right? The havamina of possible chumash may have been, look, this isn't the sefer Torah; you can only learn from the sefer Torah. Or the havamina of possible chumash may have been, look, everyone will look at that and say, look, incomplete sefer Torah, right? So maybe there never was a halacha that has more force than Kod Tzibur here. It's all some kind of, right, some kind of additional chashash. And since we're dealing with halacha d'rabbanan anyway, right, it's not clear what it would mean. It's not clear what Meikar HaDin would mean. The whole notion of a category of things we call Meikar HaDin on d'rabbanan, right, and later chashash is a very peculiar category because unless you claim a historical development that a chashash was developed later, then this is part of the takana. There is no Meikar HaDin. Okay. The next thing the Gemara, just to give you in context, talks about whether you can learn from Sifrei Haftarot. And the Gemara ends with the exact same example. The Gemara has a proof that if you can't learn from it, in fact, you can't even touch it on Shabbos because you're not allowed to write a Sefer. You're not allowed to write a Sefer of excerpts. You can't put out the Reader's Digest. Nah. Call the Chomer learn from it. We say no. Yeah, in fact, you can. Why? Because look, we see that Reuven and Reish Lakish learned Torah Shebal Peh, right, from written texts on Shabbos. Why? Because of Eis Lassos. It teaches us that all these halachas disappear in the face of Eis Lassos.
Right, it doesn't say you can't write the Sifra. It says you can't read it. It says you can't write the Sifra.
Correct, you're right, okay. But Rashi actually has, Lone Tamei Kasei Tachos Me Sefer Echa Cholim Batsmo. No, it's up here, right? My comment will need to make up the first part. Right?
That's just not a reason for reading
it. Well, the reason that you can't read it is that you're not supposed to have written it.
Got it, sorry.
Okay. Now, the boundary for Eis Lassos L'Hashem Tevei Torah Techa, this is a sort of a very casual claim. Right? It shouldn't be possible to learn. It shouldn't even be possible to write it. We have Mar Bar Vashi said you're not even allowed to touch it, right, on Shabbos. But no, guess what? We do it and it's fine.
Because the Neviim is long. If every community needs a handwritten copy of Sefer Neviim and the Sefer Torah, it's not happening. We're not going to have Haftarah.
That may very well be true. Although I have to wonder why Mar Bar Vashi didn't. It's just interesting to me that, as opposed to saying this is Eis Lassos, we say, well, look, this is just like that, and that was Eis Lassos, so why can't this be?
Huh.
Right? It's a very casual use of Eis Lassos, and it makes you wonder whether all things, whether all the principles in this, right, of this sort, which are lumped together here, particularly Kod Tzibur, are also susceptible to a very low standard of Eis Lassos. Right? If we come to the standard and say, look, it's not possible, whatever not possible means, right? As not possible as writing Sefer Neviim, then we just say, okay, Eis Lassos. Eis Lassos doesn't seem to be the doesn't seem to be the dramatic gesture that we would expect this to be. Okay, just point that also. I think there hasn't been enough investigation of what Hezlasos really means. And you know, and we shouldn't read. And so what they're claiming here is Hezlasos is not the reading. Right, the Hezlasos is the writing, and then once it's writing, then it becomes readable. So
there's no point in writing if you can't read it, is there?
Oh, let's preserve the text.
The what does the Kirin law of Shem mean?
So Rashi says that Kirin law of Torah Shabbat Peh, that Torah was being forgotten. And then he says, right, he says, Elisha by Torah is, Shein l'chol tibur v'tibur yichol at lichto v'viyam shalem. Just financially implausible. Now why? I mean, is it that much harder than writing a Sefer Torah?
Well, a Sefer Torah is probably the most valuable object that the community owns. You want them to own two of them?
Many communities own two Sefer Torah.
We have a lot of money now, sweetheart.
Okay.
And you would be requiring every community at bare minimum to start with two books of that length. Actually, Nevi'im is considerably longer than Torah.
Could be. I just don't know what the threshold is. Okay, and the Yerushalmi, I apologize, I left the limit court too long. So you have Atin Shalom Yonah Rav Yossi, Nahu Lekros B'Sefer Barabim. Not entirely clear what a Sefer means here, but most people seem to assume it refers to Chumash. We'll do independent research to see that. It's going to be cited in this sugya as if it deals with the Chumash. And he says, Amar lon asir, but not lo da asir, ela min go, the Kama should not be either, ela min go, the nafshahon aguma, inan zavin lon achore, where it seems to be a gzera, right? Really, they could lend from Chumashim, but we want them to buy full Sefer Torah. So the, right, so it seems, at least the way most people understand, the Yerushalmi, apparently, is that there is a gzera derabanan against lending from Chumashim. Right, the rabbis refuse to lie lent from Chumashim, not make a din, but because they want to protect Sefer Torah. Which is the reverse of saying Lefsher. Right, it is Efsher, and unless somebody be tempted to say Lefsher, right, we don't even allow this Bishat Hatzchas. Okay, so that tells you, you know, that really what's possible, what's not possible, though, is a question of allocation of resources.
To a point. They thought it was a question of allocation of resources here, but it might be that in the case of if they'd required them to have all of Tanakh, it wouldn't have been a matter of allocation of resources anymore. It would have been a matter of,
or it might be just,
I'm going to feed my kids and I'm leaving.
Or it might be it didn't matter enough to them.
Could be.
You know, that's the standard of a lecture. Change race changes for.
It also might depend on what the reaction would be to the tzak. Because if you have a derabanan that will result in everybody buying a Sefer Torah, that's one thing. If you have a derabanan that's going to result in everybody not bothering to read Haftorah, that's another thing entirely.
Well, it could be just a practical thing. It's counterproductive. Also possible. But it's useful to just come to these cases where you have a plain legal principle that everyone understands has to be applied differently depending on circumstances. My favorite example of this is reasonable doubt. If there's a single standard in criminal cases in America, reasonable doubt, you would have to be out of your mind to think that reasonable doubt means the same thing in capital cases as it means in shoplifting cases. But the judge will give the exact same instructions. But you have to be out of your mind to think it means the same thing. So I think, you know, that maybe it will be the same thing here. I hope that people who are sane understand that the threshold for capital cases is higher than the threshold for shoplifting cases.
We're not lying the jury here.
Okay, so
is it a reasonable assumption that all three of these sources are really just assuming that it has to be the case and looking for the reason, which is why?
Well, the problem is that you have one line in the Bible which says the Lohi, so if they were just looking for a reason, they had a perfectly good reason.
But the Lohi would. Is it so uncommon for the Gemara to reject a reasoning, like a line of reason, just because it doesn't like the reasoning, even though it's self described?
I'm not aware of at least too many other cases where, you know, we could do a quick search and see how often Velovi shows up in Chumash, whether we end up passing the same way anyway. I have my doubts about how common it is, but we should do the search.
Okay.
Well, I should look it up. This is an informal shir, so I don't claim to have done everything in advance. I should look it up. I have the, that is, eliminating the server would be to follow Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik's principle that you need 20 hours to prepare for each 1 hour of share, which I was able to do once. First time I gave share, I was able to actually have 20 hours to prepare for each share, but you don't get to do that much in your life, I've come to realize. You wouldn't get a share. You wouldn't get a share too often if that were the case. Okay. So you have, right, so you have a code seeper as such doesn't show up in the Yerushalmi. Right, so we don't know whether the Yerushalmi's rationale is the same thing as code seeper or not. Okay, now we go to Shulchan Rashba. The Rashba says, Sha'alta mevarchin betzibur al kumash kama b'sefer Torah. You know, they don't ask the question about Kriya. Right, the assumption seems to be, of course we do Kriya. The question is, when we do the Kriya, do we make the Bracha? And that relates to the question of whether, what does it mean to have a Kriya without a Bracha? Is it in fact a Kriya? Or is it just a game?
One, it's an educational policy. If you don't own a Sefer Torah and you have a community functioning that way, you don't want them not to be familiar with the words of Chumash because you don't own a Sefer Torah.
So when we say Ein Korin, does that really just mean Ein Korin B'Bracha?
No, I understand, but it doesn't have to be a game if you say not a Bracha. There are other interpretations.
That's true. But you're not doing... The question is, are you doing something that relates to the mitzvah of Kriya Sefer, just you're not making a Bracha? Or are you doing something else entirely that is designed to take the place of Kriya Sefer?
Is there a significant result of it being technically a Kriya
Sefer? Maybe that's a kind of Moshe, it's a kind of Ezra. For starters, right?
So if you had a Sefer that didn't have a Sefer Torah, and everyone would watch
it. And you would write the...
They get a Sefer Torah.
Right, so they can't make... So they, right, the Brachas aren't Nakev, but there's a lot that you can only make the Brachas on a Kasher Sefer Torah, but the Mitzvah Kriya Sefer Torah is still there.
And, or alternatively, from the other side, maybe if you don't have a minion, you can't even do it without a Bracha.
That may be, well, or if you do it, it doesn't accomplish. You have to do it. The question is, you have to do it over again.
Right.
Right. If you then the Kasher Sefer Torah is bought later. If you do it again, you do it with a Bracha.
How would you argue for can't do it? Like, what would be usher to do?
You're giving the impression that this is a ritually Kasher Sefer Torah. You're removing the incentive for people to buy Sefer Torah. Right, and the other obvious nafkamina is going to be about bringing people who are invalid for the mitzvah of Kriya Sefer Torah to being the Balei Kriya. Okay, so he says tshuva da shachumashim shenizkru hein shenichtiva kitikunan begvil v'nizkru begidin kidin Sefer Torah v'en belu chumashachas. So he says that, right, in addition to the content requirement, there is a form requirement. Right, it has to be a scroll and not a codex. And therefore, our Kumashim are certainly invalid. The Gemara's Kumashim are mutter min hadin, but asr to do bishon kod tzibur. Now, he says, right, so in the end he says, right, sulan hein legamre likros behem hatzibur ulevarech aleim. So he says, right, so he answers something slightly different in the question. Right, he ends up saying that it is in fact asr to do kriya on our Kumashim, even Kriya on our Kumashim, absent Bracha. He doesn't tell you what the halacha would be if you had a Chumash with the Gemara. He tells you the Gemara says that Minadin is Mutter, but it's Asr Lassos Kemishon Kvot Tzibur. Right? And our Chumashim are not right? Our Chumashim are Asr Minadin. What happens if it's Asr Mishon Kvot Tzibur, but you don't have any other one? Right? He doesn't tell you the outcome. You might make a diuk and say that the whole... Why does he have to bring this whole discussion? Obviously, the halacha is different in the case of the Gemara's things, and you can derive from here that if there were no other... Right, if there were no... nothing, if there was nothing else available, then it would be mutter to read and make a bracha on a chumash, which was only possible mishum kvot tzibur.
Or possibly read and make a bracha.
Right, or if it might not be talking about a case where there's no other one available, but it requires the tzibur to be milchal on their kavod. Right, it might be that so far you could learn that the teachers you can be milchal on your kavod if you take that case. You could learn that it teaches you that there are other things more important than Kol Tzibur. Or, of course, you could take the easy way out, which is to say that what greater lack of kavod for a tzibur could there be than not being able to have Pirkei Torah? Especially if you take the position that the rationale for Kol Tzibur is that it makes them look poor. Right. So which way, which one makes them look poorer? Having reading from a Chumash or having to skip Pirkei Torah? Right? So it might be that this is a case where you have no option which preserves Kol Tzibur. The only question is which preserves Kol Tzibur most, and it's obvious that having some kind of kriya is better for Kol Tzibur than having no kriya.
Is that completely obvious? I mean, if you, somebody who's really poor and has no hope of ever getting a sefer Torah, is going to, if you don't have enough food, so you're very happy to eat the poor meal that's there now that's right. Not so tasty. If you're about to have food, so you don't need anything at all, and you wait for next week.
So if you're just saying, okay, interesting, because you don't have one this week, you will have one next week. We can start making.
No, so it looks like you don't do it at all. It looks like
you're just waiting for the next one.
It looks like you have a safer jar. You found a problem last week, and it's taken the sofa for a little too long to fix it.
Okay, interesting counter argument.
It's all a matter of how you spin it.
Interesting counter argument.
Press release.
Everybody has to just make it has to be an illusion that we have postponed Kriya Satura as opposed to this is the TWA Chakira. when I had to go back to Israel for the Gulf War, so I had tickets on TWA, and TWA's policy is you get a refund if they've canceled service, but not if they've postponed your flight. And for several months TWA
postponed the whole flight to Israel
and therefore did not refund the money because of it. She'll be on the next flight.
Whatever that might be.
I ended up taking it all, obviously. Okay. Now, the Farashba and Chelek Zion Simon Kuf Nun quotes Rabbi Yitzchak, I confess to the ignorance of who Rabbi Yitzchak is. She'ein likros b'chumash and shalom shem kudresin. And he adds here about mevarech aleihem, mevarech bracha levatala ve'over alotisa. Okay, now he says the apple pisha b'haftaras regilim ha'kel b'hem. Right, so we do learn from haftaras. They aren't even chumashin, and not only that, they aren't scrolls either. They're codexes. Zeh l'pisha she'ein mitzuyin klal from shalom levim. Okay, so this is a very interesting this is a version of the parasite asking for mercy as an orphan argument. It's not allowed, you're not allowed to write Sifrei Haftorah anyway. Right, so why not use the puzzle once you wrote as you should for it? And so because what did the read from this? Because it was asked to write in the first place. It's an interesting argument. So that one doesn't. That's not the argument that interests us really. The interesting argument to us is Lefi She'enan Mitzuyin Klal Sfarim Shel Nevi'im. Now it seems that he's assuming that when the Gemara was not Matir Sifrei Daftarta, at least it was requiring that it be a scroll, not a codex. So you can't. So he's not just quoting the Gemara, right? Because the Gemara said Eitzlasos. But I say the Gemara's Eitzlasos went so far as to let you read from a scroll, but we have to extend Eitzlasos and say that right, and say that it applies even to reading from a codex. Now, I don't know why codexes are so much cheaper than scrolls. They're a lot easier to read from. Right? Codexes are a technological advance, but it's not clear to me that they're cheaper.
Smaller piece of parchment?
Smaller piece, is it really true? Why is it a smaller piece of parchment? Is it going to run on both sides?
No, because you don't make a codex out of a piece of parchment that big.
You don't make a scroll either. You sew the pieces together. The only question is, you sew the pieces together.
The pieces we sew together for Sefer Torah are much bigger than any plausible book.
Okay, so we do. So you don't have to.
I suppose.
You don't have to. So I'm not, again, you could just say, look, the Gemara standard for Eitzlasos isn't so great, so my standard for Eitzlasos doesn't have to be so great either. There aren't such things now. Right? There just aren't such things now, so why shouldn't we be? So the question is, why aren't we mekil? And you have two possibilities. Either the halacha of Kriyas HaTorah is really different, or the reality is that Sifrei Torah are present. And that will give you very different impressions of what's going on halachically. Okay. Now the Rashba on the Gemara So Sefer Torah Shachat Yiriyah Achas Ein Koren Bo. So right here we start getting, it says, Nearly, the Yiriyah Achas Lav Dafka. The Hilu Ksav Echad Ma'akev. Ksav, I think, means os. Okay, so he says that when it says Sefer Torah Shachat Yiriyah Achas, it doesn't mean a physically incomplete Sefer Torah, it means an intellectually incomplete Sefer Torah. And that's not obvious. Because you could argue as long as it has the right number of Amudim, right, it's not an incomplete Sefer. Right, physically, it's a complete sefer. Okay, and he has a very interesting. He says the Kal V'Chomer from Tefillin, because in Tefillin it says that an Os is Ma'akev, and the Gemara or Ksav is Ma'akev. And he ends up saying that it's Pshita that an Os is Ma'akev. And how can you claim that it's Pshita by Tefillin if it's not Ma'akev by Sefer Torah? Okay, now we should point out, of course, that Tefillin are not a Din Kriya. Right, Tefillin are ritual objects. Right, no one's talking about whether it's a kashrut sefer Torah for whatever ritual purpose you might have. You might require a sefer Torah to be kashrut. No, we can talk about this as a sefer Torah ritual purpose other than, for instance, you know, does it mean, you know, can a melech carry it around on his arm? Right, you know, that might be
cool.
Can you take a shul on it? Right, interesting question. Maybe it's possible for all that, but you can, right, but it's kashrut for kriya because kriya is not halacha in the chesed of sefer Torah. Right,
that's twisted. If you're not going to see the words, then we care that they be just right. And if you're going to see them, then we don't really care whether they're wrong.
Yeah, because some are defined by use and some are defined by existence. Okay, you like the Kal V'Chomer, fine. Happy with the Kal V'Chomer. Okay, and it says, Oh, Dal Korach Nafil Tawas Echaz Ma'ake, Nesetha Sofim Amru, Dafil Teva Achaz Neres Kishtayim, Pasul Vein Koren. So here the Kal V'Chomer is that if wrong letters are ma'akev, then right, then Kal V'Chomer missing letters are ma'akev, and that is not necessarily true either. Right, because they say having nothing inaccurate is not the same thing as having things that are inaccurate. But those are his two Kal V'Chomers, on the basis of which he concludes that a sefer Torah missing even one letter is even one letter is possible, and is considered for our purposes mechusar b'milteh. Okay, this is the Yeshir Abba Sey Shavu. The Chaser Besofo Eino Nifsal B'Tachos Miri Achas. Although the Emes Ito Afilu Tzav Echad Ma'akir. Okay, so this is a very interesting story.
That sounds like what we said earlier with missing
the
correct part you have.
Right. Yeah. Right,
the sentence is interrupted.
That's right. Right, so it's a very reasonable position in the abstract. Right, that the Sefer Torah has to read consistently and coherently. And stuff missing at the end, as long as you have the full Sefer Torah, it's not right. It's not a big deal. And the question why we define a Sefer Torah as a physical object mentioned by the number of Yiriyot, as opposed to defining it by itself, that's where it gets iffy to me. Right, to define a Sefer Torah as the parchment, as opposed to as letter. That's what you have to assume. And, you know, anyway, I don't know why. Like, you know, it's so extended. Right, what happens if you have a Sefer Torah which only has the first column of Horatius. Everything else is blank.
Or missing. That's the missing.
Or let's take a Chumash, right? A Chumash, which you write Horatius, and then you just attach a long string of, right, a long series of Gvilim sufficient to write the rest of Chumash. That all of a sudden makes a Kasher. Because there's reams and reams of empty parchment there. That's a very strange.
It's an unfinished Sefer Torah instead of a bad Sefer Torah.
Okay, that's interesting. So is it unfinished Sefer Torah is Kasher?
That's what you were saying.
Okay, it's an interesting position. But only if you could finish it. Physically. So it has to be in Chusr Ksiva. It's in Chusr Tzvira, then it's possible.
Do you know how many columns a Sefer Torah is before it's written? There are all some number of columns?
No, yeah. They're on a list. Line by right. You know, the top, words on the top of columns, words on the bottom of columns. Right, we follow it right now. They're not all consistent. We have different. Right, but I think right now we have Sefer Torah very standard.
Weren't there multiple? I mean, I'm not saying there were basically two in existence. But
yeah, they were. But they all assumed they were supposed to be the right one.
But I thought they had used to have Tesla begins with like
justification.
Oh, no, I'm gonna get up to a column that has to start with that word. They have to make sure I sketch out all the words, make sure I get the right things.
Okay, yeah. So that's why again that we know what the
column. I thought it was modified columns before the one that had to be
taken
away.
Yeah, I think the Rambam already has very detailed descriptions of what Sefer Torah Shel Ezra was and has to be. Okay. So this is the position. He says, but the Rashba doesn't like it. He says, "Ein mechuber beinai," because he says, "The chol beroshu v'sofu ma'akev yoser l'fi shechatrono nikar." That is a very interesting svara. That if people could read it through and not notice it was missing, that's fine. Now the question is: so is chatrono nikar? You think that'd be better?
Right.
The only question I would say is that, it's a question of appearances, not a question of substance.
I mean, he's worried about ksiva, not about preserving the correct text.
He's worried about
what
Rashi
was saying. Sorry, what were you saying?
Is he worried about what Rashi is worried about? Not really.
People will call it a Sefer Torah.
Yeah, he's worried about it looking bad.
Yeah. Okay, you know.
It sounds like the same thing. It's not unfinished anymore. As much as you didn't get to the end, it's that you actually missed something.
No, he thinks the other way around. He thinks that maybe you could skip in the middle, right? But at the beginning and the end you can't skip, right? That's his, and he thinks you can't skip anything. But if you could skip something, it would be better to skip the middle than the beginning or the end, because in the middle, who's going to tell? Well, what, somebody's going to count through the sacred through the middle of the sacred door and make sure you have every column. So you hope somebody's paying attention to shul when you get to that portion.
And if he were in charge, we'd have a lot more manuscript problems.
Yeah. I have to say this is a
it's remarkable how few manuscript problems we have. Apparently the Rashba lost.
We have the Masoret. The Masoret is an astounding thing. Masoret is an absolutely astounding thing. Yeah, you can check yourself 16 ways from Sunday to make sure that everything's right.
What's more, we do check.
Yeah. Unbelievable proofreading. Unbelievable proofreading system. Okay, so he says he thinks that his Rebbeim are wrong. Elanirli, the Hachanami Hafilu Ksav Echad Ma'akev B'chol Makom. Okay, so it seems the halacha is that he thinks that you can't learn from a Sefer Torah that's missing even one letter, although possibly Nikar Din you could learn from a Chumash, because it's not right, because it's not Mechus from Milsei. Now the question is, so why does it say Yiriyah Achas? And here, just ask your help. If anybody can read the rest of it and tell you what he's talking about, that would be terrific.
Reasonable compromise size and block to choose.
But is that a substantive point or a literary point?
It sounds literary, but who knows?
I agree that it sounds literary.
Right,
so what does that mean? It takes figures of speech, right, or it changes the law. He says, so his literary solution, right, to why Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni says Yiriyah instead of Ketav, is Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni's position is intended exclusively to eliminate the possibility of learning from Chumashim. Right? You understand, right? Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni says, Sefer Torah Shechatzar Afilu Yiriyah, he's not coming to tell you that smaller things than Yiriyahs are okay. He's going to tell you that bigger things than Yiriyos are worse. Mm-hmm. Right? So Shmuel Bar Nachmeni's svara is that, right, is that the only difference between a chumash, right, all the chumashes is the Sefer Torah is missing more Yiriyos. But he doesn't think of his chumash as an entire unit. He thinks of the Sefer Torah as a unit. Right? And so he says, look, a Sefer Torah is missing even one Yiriyah if possible. But what you're going to do is, Kalachom or a Sefer Torah is missing many Yiriyos such as a chumash.
Is everything all that Shmuel was arguing was trying to do?
That's what the Rashba is saying in Shlomo Nachmanides' position is.
But his position was quoted for that purpose.
That's right. It says, so the Rashba thinks that the Gemara nailed Rishon Barachmani's position exactly right. But it wasn't the Chiddush. Oh, since he says that, therefore a Chumash must also be Aser. The whole point of his statement was, right, because whoever had a Sefer Torah was Chosrei, right, in the middle of Pasas, Sefer Torah and Pasas. But that wasn't the threat. Right, the question is, he had to see that sociologically, that people had chumashim, they want to know, can you enter chumashim? And Shlomo Baruch Meni says, no, either you have a complete Sefer Torah physically, or you don't. Entirely separate question, which Shlomo Baruch Meni didn't touch, is what happens if you have a complete Sefer, but there's a letter wrong in it, or a letter missing in it? That's a different question, which is irrelevant to Shlomo Baruch Meni's statement. It happens that that's also possible, but it's possible for a different reason. Rav Shmuel Rachmani is talking about the psul for physical. He's talking about, right, if they have psul chasev, right? Not a psul, right? Not a psul, not right? Not a psul talus. Okay. So now, right? That much I understand. As the Derech HaTalmud came with Karev Anyanin. The Shlo Yomar Ze Afilu Chaser Abba the Chumash and Karinbo, Ze Yomar Afilu Chaser Ksav Echad Ein Karinbo, Vafichach Amar Afilu Chaser Yachad Ein Karinbo. So this is where I have trouble. I don't know what the
It would be too much of a Kavachomer if we said it the other way.
It may be he holds that even if it's missing one letter, it is also Chaser. But if you said that, then people would just say, what's the comparison? Right, missing one letter, missing a whole collage is too big a leap, so we take a halfway position and say, right, we take the closest thing that is obviously possible to people, so that the Kavachomer is a smaller leap. Right, so let's say, right, if we want to tell you that it's usher, if we want to tell you that it's usher to, I don't know. What the other example? We want to tell you it's usher to do something even larger. We want to tell you it's usher to eat a just less than a kosevus agasin yom kippur. So we say, look, it's even usher to eat a kezayis because of chatishir. The truth is, it's usher to eat less than a kezayis also. Right? People already recognize the category of kezayis, I guess. Yeah, I'd be interested to see, and this is again a search I haven't done, to see if this notion of the karev yanim shows up elsewhere. And we can. But that's my take is that it's his whole problem is, right, he wants to say Ksav Echad is possible, but by the normal canons of Talmudic literature, whenever somebody creates, you always try and say the biggest Chiddush. And if you say something that isn't the biggest Chiddush, it means the biggest Chiddush isn't true. Right, that's the normal way Talmudic logic functions. So he said no, but there are literary cases where that's not true. Right. Sometimes we say the less big chiddush in order to make a better analogy. Okay, just so you don't think it is. Okay, we should just check. We should just quickly see whether the part of any name shows up. Should have just searched in the show. Okay, so it's also in the Rashba. It's also in the Rashba of the Vatra, interestingly enough. The only other place it shows up is in the Rashba. So it's worth looking at that case. It's the same kind of argument. Okay, sounds like somebody has a paper there. Literary structure of the Rashba. Okay, so now he says, Vishala Yomar, okay, fine. Vasikna, rather of Yosef Amri Tarvayu, Ein Korn Chumash Mishun Kvod Tzibur. Right, so now understand that, so his claim, which is, I think, pretty radical, is that when the Gemara says Lohi, it's not rejecting the Raya from Shmuel Bar Nachmani, it's rejecting Shmuel Bar Nachmani. Right, so that's a pretty radical reading of the Gemara. To say that the Stam is right, that the Stam of Gemara is rejecting an Amora, not just rejecting the Pshat and the Beis Medrash from it. But the Maskana is that even though we reject and have to figure out the halacha, If we reject this, so we reject this, so that means that Chumashim are kosher. The whole statement of Fili Yiri Achas is now rejected. But nonetheless, he wants to believe that a more radical statement than that is true, for reasons other than Kol Tzibur. Now that's a complicated position to leave him in. He no longer has anybody saying it. Right, that a Sefer Torah was Tzavechad, right, that it's missing Tzavechad is possible. But I guess you can derive from the Gemara says that Nechsar B'milte is the Psul. So you can say Nechsar B'milte applies to the lettering and not just to the physical object. Because look, if it's obviously a Chumash is not a complete physical object, it's kosher anyways. The only grounds the Gemara can have is the letter. Okay, I think that there are a bunch of ways in which this reading pushes the Gemara that are not obvious. So he said, now he says, Benirli l'halacha, dekei v'shekein, kol sha sefer shalem, Rosalomar, chamisha chumshin, afila nimtza ta'uyos be'echad min ha'chumashin, kol sha ena korei be'ot ha'chumash, korei v'sh'ar ha'chumashin ve'ena koshish. Okay, this is a radical chiddush. He says, if this is the case, so we have two separate halachas. One is halacha that you have to have all five chumashin, and the second is halacha that you have to read it accurately. And he makes this wild chiddush. In terms of letters, a chumash is a perfectly fine yiddish, right? And the only question is this chumash complete? But when it comes to physically, no, the chumash has to be. It has to have all the areas. But a chumash is unique in terms. Now, why a chumash is about is the why a chumash is the standard for what defines a right what defines a kasher puzzle, right? Kasher puzzle number of letters. It's again just a totally radical chiddush, I think.
So if you were to take a chumash and just attach a whole bunch of blank parchment to it, so it looked to everybody else like you had a really big scroll, would that also fulfill those requirements?
It might.
Do the other chumashim have to be written on it at all?
It might be in the end that that's right.
Maybe I can have Moby Dick written on the rest of it. Like,
let me not read from that.
I read this part, and when the other people are reading, I've got my book.
Yes, exactly. We'll just integrate the comic books directly into the textbook.
Well, I think that he says that all the mistakes have to be hardened enough machine, but maybe you can't have a scroll like all over the place, but one of them could be all of them.
Oh, you can see, you can have a Vayikra thing, but as long as that's a big chiddush also. Let's figure out how he's getting there. He says that the only psul of chumash now is Kvod Tzibur.
Because it makes you look poor.
So chumash is not chaser. Okay, so the only purpose of the other four books is to make right, it's prevent kavod. So all it, so it becomes purely a matter of appearances. If you could fool people into right, if you write Moby Dick in Hebrew and you have an illiterate group, right, that would be fine.
As long as you don't read from
and we don't read from the other parts.
The book that it has.
Yeah. That's a wild, wild thing, right? That's a wild, wild thing, right? But that's what he ends up saying, right? That the way he understands Gemara at the end is the attempt to possible chumash as chaser is rejected. That's pashup shot in the Gemara. But right, the other move is that he thinks, therefore, that the chaser yiriyah achas as chaser is right is also possible. There is no difference. Right, his big move is that we would have read the Gemara. We did read the Gemara as saying that a sefer Torah as chaser yiriyah achas is possible because it's supposed to be a sefer Torah and it failed, and that's what Mechusar Milsing means. And he says no. Right, really, in the end, there's no psul chaser anymore either, and the chaser of milte, not the chaser of milte, is either a function of absent columns of letters as opposed to letters, or ends up is just another way of framing chod tzibur. But in the end, it's really. Right, the halacha of Kvod Tzibur is that the Tzibur should not be for, right, should not appear to not have a full Sefer Torah. It doesn't actually have to have a Sefer Torah, and it certainly doesn't have to have a Kasher Sefer Torah.
It does have a Kasher Chumash.
But it does have to have a Kasher Chumash. And there he thinks that's Maker. Right, there he thinks that's Maker Adin. And within that, having one letter wrong is Maker Adin. Okay, I think that at the end of it, you, if you look at it abstractly, it looks like everything was reasonable, but the number of moves that you have to make to get to this conclusion is really quite astounding. Okay, Shain Talos Chumash Tosil Tashar, Shain Nachtin Zed Zed Elokabad Balma, right? So what we learn, in the Lalach at the end is that, really the unit of Torah is the Sefer. And somehow there's some kind of just social thing that a tzibur should have a whole kind of, that a tzibur should have a whole Sefer Torah. And I understand that might be because, look, if you don't have a whole Sefer Torah, you're not going to have Kriya the other, right, four-fifths of the year. But why this should be a problem if a tzibur is five separate, right, chumashim? Right? Why if we require a tzibur to have a full Sefer Torah as opposed for a tzibur to have the full Torah in Sfarim? Right. It's not right. It's not clear. Not clear at all. So he tells you the reason is shal yirah masav keosim masav banius shein tzibrani. Okay. Now this is obviously has very broad sociological implications. The notion that right, that a community has to act rich even if individual members are impoverished, which you know, plays out positively negatively in the Hasidic court. Anyway, this is the phenomenon of building the Gothic cathedral in the midst of total poverty. I don't know. And again, it's not clear to me why this is also massive and that everybody knows you have a you have five chumashim. It's just easier to handle chumashim, right? Than it is. For example, if you want, he says that it's going to prevent tirchut tzibura, right? Because you want to go from Devarim to Bereishis. It's a lot easier if you can just take out a Sefer Bereishis as opposed to have, if you had them sewn all together, it's right down to the Torah, it's going to take you an hour. So I think this is a this is a stretch. At the end he says, but chaser there isn't because the Chumash Shanu Karin Bo is not missing anything. Okay, so this week this is probably a good stopping point. And next time we will hit the Shulchan Rishta. And the question to consider in the Shulchan Rishta is whether it is possible for the Rishta to be relating to our text of the Gemara. And I will tell you that there is no alternate text of the Gemara preserved in manuscripts. I have Lieberman CD, and at least on the Lieberman CD there is no alternative text. So you have to make up your own mind whether the Ritva is the surviving witness to this text, I don't have the Machon HaTalmud Yisraeli HaShalem, so I can't tell you if the other Rishonim will have the same. Right, who have been
the
same.
Who is the right Ritva?
Or is it somebody, right? Whoever it was, right? I think this is the Ritva was supposed to be the Ritva, not the Fisher Ben Kreskis.
No, actually, that's in the meeting that there was a mistake somewhere along the line, which is why it sounds like it's wrong.
Oh, well, okay, we'll read the Ritva. I don't think there's anything unintelligible about the Ritva. The only question is whether it relates to our Gemara. And then we're going to read for the Shulchan Rambam and see what we think the Rambam is actually saying. And how it relates to the original claim that Tzvot Tzibur means that there isn't a more, Lafuke, a more serious technical problem. And then we will spend some time, which I'll begin to give you here, on the reception history of the Rambam and how people understood the Rambam. Right? It turns out that when we read the Rambam that we understood the Rambam the way everybody else does, so then we can probably skip that because we're just going to read it over and over again. But it turns out we read the Rambam that we understand it differently. But then they say, look at how everybody else did and see it, right, and see why we read it differently. Okay.